I feel like I'm in the wrong room because I'm presenting something later on integration in China, Cuba, the Philippines, and India. And this is a medical, anthropological, very theoretical paper, so you can think of this as a break slightly from what you've heard before, or you could think that this is possibly switched with the other one that I'll be presenting later, which is more pertinent to this. So I have no financial relationships to disclose. So the order of this presentation is I'll go over my research methods that I use to come to this theoretical analysis. The ordered systems of understanding of the Enlightenment, the ordered systems of Chinese medicines, the issues of quote-unquote authoritative knowledge and biomedical expertise, and the shifting paradigms from reductionism to holisms. So one question that I'm asking in this theoretical analysis that came after my doctoral research, or actually was part of my doctoral research, was how can we judge one ordered system of understanding by a completely different ordered system? And this goes into the whole issue of research being appropriate, biomedical research being appropriate for anything that is not biomedicine that's really coming from a different paradigm. So the research methods that this was originally based on was a critical analysis of the 22 months of research concerning healthcare integration in communities of four rural municipalities in the rural Philippines. And I had a purposive and snowball sample of 1,023 informants that I spoke with, all of them, consisting of community members, community leaders, healthcare providers, policy actors who participated in semi-structured interviews, focus groups, and pile sorts. Participant experience was also compiled over a year-long period in both the traditional medicine unit of the Western Pacific Region Office of WHO, where I was employed for a year as a researcher, and the Philippine Institute of Traditional and Alternative Healthcare of the Department of Health of the Philippines, known as PITAC. The ordered systems of understanding of the Enlightenment is important to first understand how some people thus far have been framing CAM or non-biomedicine, and also how it's normatively formed. And I like this idea of the parable of the blind man and the elephant. And if you forgot this or you didn't have this as part of your childhood, there were five blind men, and supposedly they were each at a different part of the elephant. And to them, the elephant was either a sphere, or the elephant at the ears was a fan, etc. But when you put it together, and I would say even if you're a seeing person putting this together, you don't get elephant. And this is, in my mind, a metaphor for reductionism. The theoretical analysis that I used was the work of the anthropologist Mary Douglas. And she looked basically at how people order their systems of what she called understanding and meaning. And this is really what I came to when I was seeing these conflicts between people who espoused a biomedical position versus a non-biomedical position, was this boundary between ordered systems of understanding and meaning. And Douglas states in her book, Purity and Danger, with awareness of the difference between self and other, come boundaries, ordering, rules, laws, and taboos in order to preserve the integrity of the self that is now perceived to be at risk from the other. And I think that's most important. So from Douglas, we can understand the importance of preserving the integrity of one's ordered system of understanding and meaning that facilitates the means for navigation through life for any given group. And that includes the integrity of one's ordered system of non-biomedicine or whatever their local practices are. So in the Western Enlightenment, I would argue that it's very much influenced, even though it was trying to divide from the Judeo-Christian order of making order out of chaos. And I'm not a theological scholar, but if you go back to Genesis, you will see that there are very specific ways of ordering, starting with Adam and Eve, and everything is a dichotomy. And you're basically getting the message that there's one way to do something and the other way is the wrong way or the evil way. Well, even though in the Enlightenment we try to, or it was attempted, especially with Descartes, to break from from monotheism, I would argue that there are still dichotomies that are presented. This is a algorithm of how to get to heaven or hell, supposedly. But you could see the same pattern. You could see the same pattern when you look at the closed systems thinking, and I'll discuss closed and complex systems in biomedical education. And I'm a nurse practitioner. As part of my education, as a nurse practitioner, we learned algorithms as well. What to do if the patient does this, you do this. If they don't do anything, you do that. And this is a very reductive way of thinking about human beings. Whereas if we compare this with the order systems of understanding of Chinese medicine, I'm also an acupuncturist herbalist, so I kind of am somewhat schizophrenic, depending on, you know, who I'm treating with what, we can see that it's not a binary process. It's not an either-or process. It's a process where you're really, if you do diagnosis in Chinese medicine, you're putting many different areas together, and I'm afraid to use the word that you're thinking holistically, but you are thinking in terms of the whole being that's in front of you. And this, you know, we could say that one of the main differences can be found in the scientific method. In the scientific method, as you all know, you have your independent variable and your dependent variable, and regardless if you have this little break in here, you still have this closed, unilinear, unidirectional pattern that nothing else can get into. There's no accounting for the outside world. Well, that may work for a rock in a test tube, but it doesn't work for human beings, and it certainly doesn't work for human beings in a social system. And so if you compare this, and Friedrich Capra talked about this as well, if you compare this with, for example, a Chinese Taoist perspective, where A can be a part of B, or B can be a part of A, and they can switch as well. It's very different from what you see here still as a binary dichotomy or system. Whereas in Chinese medicine, as in Chinese culture, and if you go to any museum that has Chinese art in it, it'll be very interesting because you'll see these depictions of balance in nature. And if you see a human being in those pictures, in these paintings and prints, you'll see that they're usually very small until we start getting to the 18th, 19th, and definitely the 20th century, where the individual becomes larger than the background, and the individual is no longer a part of nature. It was really quite shocking when I was going through all these scroll paintings that were in order of a timeline, in a way, in a museum in Macau, and I was seeing that suddenly nature was lost, that we were not balanced with nature anymore. We were stepping out from nature and apart from nature. Another issue with reductionism is that we have this idea of, and this is something Descartes proposed, of man as a mechanism or beings as mechanisms that have replaceable parts, the mechanical being. Whereas in Chinese medicines, there is not one body. There's many bodies. Volker Scheidt has discussed this, where they're almost interspersed on top of one another. And so the main idea that, of course, was divided with Descartes was that there is no separation between the mind and the body, that you have one holistic unit, and therefore you have these processes, these bodies of processes that occur in Chinese medicine. Well, so why is this a problem? Why are these two paradigms a problem and so disparate and causing really what we tend to ignore in research is a real problem with research? Well, part of it stems from biomedical expertise, which I would argue really comes from authoritative knowledge. Bridget Jordan, who's an anthropologist, describes authoritative knowledge as equally legitimate parallel knowledge systems that people move easily between, but often only one kind of knowledge will gain ascendancy and legitimacy. And she identifies the phenomenon as the domination of authoritative knowledge. The issue is that all other kinds of knowledge are devalued or dismissed or thought of as backward, ignorant, naive, primitive, etc. And usually it's thought of on this timeline, which you could put many Western disciplines on, including international development, is on this timeline as well. And I'm teaching now from a social science book, which on the first page they use the word primitive, and I ask my students, what's wrong with this? We could also look at Gramsci and his definition of hegemony as starting from social systems, that the elite in the group or the oligarchy of the group were basically controlling what would be considered knowledge. And Foucault has the same idea when he talks about discourse. Well, in biomedicine, this really started with the Flexner Report, especially in the Americas. And Abraham Flexner basically decided to standardize medical education at the turn of the century. He was first hired by Carnegie, but Rockefeller picked him up. And Rockefeller really devised an international scheme and was one of the first foundations, philanthropies, to really internationalize biomedicine. And there were many reasons for this that I can't get into right now that weren't always about medicine. Suffice it to say that they really created this idea of international expertise, and that the expertise of the biomedical physician was the one who would control all that came beneath him or her. Well, this can be seen in the integration of Chinese medicine, which basically was an integration of various types of local Chinese medicines under Mao Zedong and his physicians that were standardized into what we now call TCM. And so TCM is very much influenced by Western medicine. TCM is itself an integrated model. So how do we, I presented the problem, now what do we do with it? What? How do we really communicate across this boundary? And so how do you move from reductionism to holism or vice versa? Well, I propose that something you may have heard of, complexity theory, offers one way to start to think about, and I think we must think about it, get out of the 17th century, in terms of medicine and in terms of healthcare and in terms of public health, the idea of using models of complexity. And you could see this in this example of obesity, though I would argue this isn't totally a complex model, this is still somewhat reductive, but usually we just look here at this, what is that, right end. But you really need to look all the way out here, and in much research I've done, I look all the way out here at the trade level and what trade is really doing to health. You could tell your diabetic patient to self-manage, but if they don't have a built environment that allows them to do that because of trade agreements, what can they do really? It really is a larger issue. This is a complex model, and if I had this animated, if I knew how to play with computers and was able to animate this and things were moving in and out and all over the place, we'd have true complexity. It would be an open system where things can freely move in and out of them that would affect one another in different ways, and you'd have new outcomes by virtue of these interactions. Another way that you could think of this is a kaleidoscope. I don't know, I'm maybe nutty, but I collect them, and I always get stopped in airports for this. But a regular kaleidoscope is pieces of plastic or glass. It's a solid. And every time you turn it, it'll fall into a different pattern, but the pattern will repeat itself after a while. Well, this is quite different from the more psychedelic kaleidoscope, which is made out of different colored oils. And you have this immersion that can form new colors, new patterns, things you haven't seen before. This is a metaphor for really the difference between seeing people and social situations in this way versus this way, which is much more, I think, a real way of looking at the situation. And I would argue that this is in traditional Chinese medicine, and definitely in many of the Chinese medicines, the way that we look at things in this more freely chaotic, non-solid way. So what I'm going to finish with, and granted I didn't present the actual research this was based on, but I presented some of the theory afterwards, is that holistic paradigms are best served by holistic thinking. And TCM and Chinese medicines, and I would argue that many of what we call CAM modalities and local modalities are based on holistic thinking, which approximates nature. And so can we really judge them in a way that doesn't allow for that holistic thinking? And interestingly, Margaret Chan said something that I thought was fascinating, and she really talked about bidirectionality, especially in terms of research and in terms of integration. She said the two systems, and it's interesting that Margaret Chan said this, but the director, Zhaoru Zhang, of TCAM division, the TRM unit at WHO, would never say anything like this. She would say traditional medicine is scientific. But Chan said, the two systems of traditional Western medicine need not clash. Within the context of primary health care, they can blend together in a beneficial harmony, using the best features of each system and compensating for certain weaknesses in each. And I would argue that biomedicine has a lot that it can learn from especially Chinese medicines. So thank you very much for your time, and I hope you weren't bored with something completely different here.
Could you put the last quote up again?
She actually said that. But you must look at the political context. Margaret Chan is a Chinese national. And in she was put forward by the Chinese Communist Party, and in many ways there's a political context to this quote that can't be overlooked.
Thank you very much.